Welcome to Treasures Old and New from ART. Hi, I'm Joy Jackson. We continue with the closing episodes of Isle of a Mystery, Terror at Frozen Corpse Lodge. An international criminal gang has been operating in the barn. Here's episode 17.
American Radio Theater presents I Love a Mystery. A new Carlton E. Morse adventure thriller, Terror of Frozen Corpse Lodge. Three o'clock in the afternoon, snowbound at Frozen Corpse Lodge, high and isolated in the Sierra Mountains, somewhere on the California-Nevada border. The weather, which this morning was sub-zero, has suddenly turned bright and hot, and already the weekend's 6 to 8 feet of new snow is beginning to melt and run. In another 24 hours, those who are left alive at the J. Irving Stark Hunting Lodge will be able to leave and catch the narrow-gauge railway back to Reno and civilization. Those who are left alive. Of those who gathered 2 days ago for a weekend of snow sports up here on top of the world, the ancient butler Mansfield is dead. J. Irving Stark is dead, and Bruce Garrett is dead. And out in the tool shed is the body of still another man, Philip Ogden, a friend of Gale Stark, and like three other friends of Gale's back in Hollywood, met his death within 24 hours after kissing her. And those who are left, besides Jack, Doc, and Jerry Booker, are Gale and the new butler, Jones, and the guest for the night, A.J. Ben, and the caretaker, P.O. Jones and Ben have revealed themselves as special investigators looking into subversive activities in the vicinity of the lodge, and Pio, accused of the murders, has escaped from the lodge and has taken refuge at the barn, where other members of some international gang are in hiding. It is now known that beneath the stable is an elaborate wireless telegraphy setup in the hands of desperate persons. It is also known that in their possession is a veritable arsenal of rifles, machine guns, and other weapons of sudden death. Bruce Garrett, in his last gasping words, warned to watch out for P.O. Watch out for P.O. To which Doc replied,
"Well, that just about takes care of everything. We catch P.O. and we got the murderer. Let's get to that barn and get him."
Oh, Bruce.
Jerry.
Yeah?
Take Miss Stark into the tap room.
Oh, sure. Come on, Gale.
We'll be with you in a minute.
If I just knew what it was all about.
But Jack.
Doc, give me a hand.
Huh?
Help me lift Garrett's body up on the lounge over there. Ben, bring that old blanket along to cover him over.
Yes.
Now then, Doc.
Looks to me like you're a lot more interested in the dead than you are in the folks that murdered him.
We gotta take care of Garrett out of respect to Miss Stark's feelings. All right, set him down.
Yeah, there. And in the meantime, P.O. and his fine feathered friends escaped from the barn on snowshoes.
Not a chance.
Huh?
Here, give me that blanket, Ben.
Yeah. Nobody's going to escape from that barn. Jones is out there with a rifle waiting for somebody to try it.
There. That'll take care of Bruce Garrett until the proper authorities arrive.
Which won't be too many hours if the sun stays out like this.
Yeah. Come on in the tap room.
But, Jack, ain't we going out to the barn?
Not yet.
What you mean, not yet?
Not until we've heard what Ben here has to tell us.
You mean you want me to talk now?
Yes. Come on in here. I want Miss Stark to hear everything you've got to say.
Golly, Jack. I can't do anything with her. She just sits here with her head in her arms, kind of whimpering.
Poor little fella.
Yeah.
Come on, everyone. Sit down. You here, Ben.
Okay.
Now then, Miss Stark, Mr. Ben here is going to tell you a story. Are you listening?
Yes.
All right. Go ahead, Ben.
As I told you a little time back, Jones and I are special investigators. We were put on this job for the one big purpose of tracking down and capturing a master criminal who is wanted in at least 2 European and 1 South American capital for murder and worse.
Huh? Well, what's worse than murder?
Treason, for one thing. We took up our trail on the East Coast, and step by step it began to lead us into Southern California, where we lost it for several months. And then when we picked it up again, it slowly began to point us toward the California-Nevada border, somewhere in the general vicinity of Reno.
You mean somebody here at Frozen Corpse Lodge is this international criminal?
We're getting a little ahead of the story. The part of our manhunt that you'll be particularly interested in began about 3 or 4 months ago. I received orders from my superiors to get in touch with a certain semi-official organization in Los Angeles, which consisted of young men who were secretly being trained by accredited officials of a branch of the government, the name of which I am not permitted to mention.
Trained for what?
For whatever secret work at home or abroad they might be called upon to perform. Understand, they were training on their own, just as you or I might join a Red Cross or defense unit out of patriotic fervor.
Are you telling me about those three friends of mine who came and kissed me goodbye and were murdered within 24 hours?
Yes. Miss Stark, why did you kiss those boys?
Why did I? But they kissed me. Each said he was going away, and was I going to kiss them goodbye? Goodness, I've known them all my life. Why shouldn't I kiss them on the cheek? It was just a friendly... Why? What is this? Why do you ask?
I just want you to understand what a vicious person we're dealing with, how carefully he planned, how he drew his web about anyone who could be of any use to him. He apparently knew you would kiss your friends goodbye if they asked you to.
Well, yes, of course. Anyone who knew our crowd would know that.
Yes, well, when Jones and I took this group of young men into our confidence, they began to pick up the most amazing scents almost at once. There would be phone messages, unsigned letters, bits of overheard conversation, all of which seemed to put some one of them on the trail of our master criminal.
This information would only come to one of the boys at a time?
Yes, and up to a point they would confide in Jones and me, and then suddenly they wouldn't tell us anything more, and a day or so later, his death.
But Gale said they was killed by police for holding up a liquor store.
Yeah, this is what would happen. We got it from the third boy, who didn't die for some hours. A message would come to the young man. It would say, "Do not tell this to a soul, or you will be endangering not only yourself, but a friend. Go to Gale Stark and tell her you are going away. If she kisses you, it is a signal for you to carry out the rest of these instructions. If she does not kiss you, wait 3 days and go to her again."
But that makes me sound like I was part of the intrigue.
Exactly what our master criminal wanted. It involved you, and it gave the boys confidence to go on with the rest of his instructions. Surely you would not kiss them and send them to their death.
But that's what I did.
Unwittingly.
But I did. I did it just the same.
Oh, hey now, Miss Stark. You hadn't ought to take it like that.
It's so horrible.
Oh, it's going to be all right, Gal.
And what were the rest of the instructions, Ben?
The boy was told to go to a certain liquor store just after midnight. His signal to the liquor store dealer was to pull a revolver from his pocket and say in a low voice, "How would you like a slug of lead in your liver?" According to the instructions, the dealer would then direct him to someone who could give him definite information, which would lead to the arrest of our mastermind.
But instead of that, he was shot to death by the police.
Yes, the police had been tipped off and were hiding behind the counter waiting. And the most vicious part was that the police were warned that the stick-up man would shoot if he wasn't shot first.
Golly, what a mind.
Please, please tell me this much. Was this horrible criminal anyone I knew?
Very well.
Oh, please, it wasn't Jay Irving.
No, it wasn't your stepfather, although he was involved.
Well, yes, I know. Bruce said he and Jay Irving were involved, but he didn't mean to involve me. It wasn't Bruce, was it? Bruce has been all over the world.
Let's take one thing at a time. Suddenly, the scene changed from Southern California to Nevada when word came through last week that our man had been seen walking the streets of Reno. Jones and young Philip Ogden and I immediately took a plane up here.
Phil is working with you?
That's right.
Then you did recognize young Ogden when Pio brought his body in out of the snow.
Yes. At that time, I wasn't sure of you and Doc here. I wasn't trusting anyone.
Well, that accounts for young Ogden being up here. And I guess that's what we heard over the radio, too. I mean, about the great manhunt in this vicinity. Word had gotten out that this master criminal you was after.
Yes. And if I needed anything to confirm my belief that he was somewhere here at Frozen Corpse Lodge, the wrecking of the radios and the telephone did it.
Yes. He was afraid we'd get his description. But how'd you finally locate this lodge as the criminal's hangout?
Our information said that when seen, he'd been dressed for heavy mountain and snow country. We began to check every place that came under that description within a day's run of Reno. Ogden and Jones and I split up and scattered over the countryside. Ogden found this place and telephoned to our hotel in Reno.
Phoned? From here?
Yes. He said he broke into the lodge and to get up here on the double quick as he'd found something important.
You talked to him on the phone?
No, the message was waiting when Jones and I got back from an unsuccessful day of searching. We checked on the lodge, found it was supposed to be owned by a J. Irving Stark, but was actually the property of his stepdaughter. That Stark, his stepdaughter, and her fiancé, Bruce Garrett, and several other guests were spending this weekend at the lodge.
Yeah, I could see where it kind of begins to tie in. Miss Gail Stark here kissed the boys down in Hollywood before they died, and now here's suspicious things happening up here at her lodge in the mountains.
Exactly. So Jones and I decided to join the weekend party. I was to come in as a hiker who had lost my way, and Jones was coming in as a new butler.
You mean Jones just made up that part about Mr. Stark calling to Reno for a new butler?
Yes. He knew Stark would have to put him up in the servants' quarters overnight, as there wasn't any way to get back to Reno. So he'd have a chance to listen to what was being said in back of the house.
And then old man Sfield was killed.
Yes. Apparently he was beginning to get wind of what was going on.
Yes. He wanted desperately to tell us something, but he never got the chance.
Mr. Ben was he killed by the master criminal?
Yes, just as all the others were.
But couldn't you have stopped him? Surely you must have a description of him. You must know what he looks like and talks like and everything there is to know about him.
We thought we did. We thought we knew all his tricks and disguises, but apparently we didn't.
You mean you don't know who he is?
We think we know now. But if we're right, he's taken on a personality unlike anything we've ever heard about. It hardly seems possible, but first let me tell you how your stepfather and Bruce Garrett became involved.
Then Bruce isn't the criminal.
Oh, he was criminal enough in his own right, but he was only second fiddle to the man we want. This man built up gigantic international crime rings in London, Moscow, and Mexico City at various times in his career, and each time he barely escaped from the country with his life, let alone any wealth. This last time before he came to the United States, he was forced to flee from Mexico City with a lynching mob at his heels. Broke, he had to get money quick. He was a handsome, dapper figure of a man, and mixed easily in the hodgepodge society of Hollywood. He met Bruce Garrett at Palm Springs, and without Garrett knowing who he was, except that he was a clever, shady figure which Garrett admired, our friend persuaded him to dig down deep in a gun-running and diamond-smuggling project.
You mean that's what all this set-up out in the barn is? Smuggling and gun-running racket?
That's what Garrett thought he was putting his money into. And that's what J. Irving Stark thought he was getting into when he agreed to let them build the wireless telegraphy unit under the barn.
I'm beginning to see. And then the murders began to happen, and J. Irving got scared. He was in something he didn't mean to be in.
Exactly. And finally, when Bruce Garrett got caught in the bear trap and jibed at Stark about him knowing all about it, J. Irving was frantic, and he was on the point of giving the whole thing away when P.O. came in with the boiling water and spilled it on Stark.
P.O. did that on purpose?
I'm sure he did.
To keep J. Irving from talking.
That's right.
Then P.O.'s the mastermind.
P.O.? I don't believe it.
It seems incredulous, and yet everything points to it. It was P.O.'s rifle Jones found in the basement just after it had been used to shoot Stark in the back as he was trying to escape from the lodge. And it was a Mexican knife that finally lodged in Stark's throat, ending his life.
He just had to kill J. Irving to keep him from talking, didn't he?
Yes, and that's what threw Bruce Garrett into a panic. First, Stark murdered, and then you girls kidnapped. He realized that the Big Shot intended to liquidate everyone who knew anything about his business. He knew that unless he acted, and acted fast, all of you would be dead and entirely disposed of before the snow had melted and investigators could get in here.
And so he went down to the barn and got the girls loose.
And died for his courage.
And just the same, he was quite right when he said he'd brought it on himself. He was trying to be a smart playboy skirting the edge of crime. Instead of that, he found himself right in the middle of murder and crime and desperate acts against the government.
Hey, you mean this guy even went in for...
What do you think that wireless telegraphy setup was for? He was probably making plenty of money as somebody's paid agent.
I still don't get it. How could it be P.O.?
Yes, surely not P.O. You said this man was a suave, dapper person. P.O.'s nothing but a Spanish or Mexican workman. Besides, he's been with us for 2 years and...
Hello there, Ben. Where are you?
That's Jones.
We're in here, Jones. In the tap room, or whatever you call it.
Is Ben in there?
Yes, I'm in here.
Well, stay where you are. Come on, you.
He's got somebody with him.
Go on, right into the tap room with you.
No, senor. Such rough treatment.
Tio.
Si, senorita. I do not know why he do this to me.
Maybe you don't know now, but you will.
Jones, I told you to watch the barn no matter what happened.
You don't want me to stand out there in the cold watching a bunch of dead pigeons, do you?
Dead pigeons?
Sure. Didn't you hear all the shooting out there?
Shooting? You mean... No, we didn't hear anything. The snow against the house.
You mean somebody else is dead?
See? I killed them.
You killed who?
All those persons we clutter up the barn with guns and tick, tick, tick machines. I show you which side Pio was on.
You killed the men in the barn and then came out and surrendered to Jones?
See? I am one good fella, I tell you. I am good natured, too. But when somebody make me mad, somebody better look out. See?
And there's your international criminal, Mr. Ben. Some mastermind, I don't think.
This has been a presentation of a lost old-time radio show by American Radio Theater. I Love a Mystery was written by Carlton E. Morris. This was Book 25, Terror at Frozen Corpse Lodge. Directed by Marge Lutton, assisted by Greg Porter, and produced by Joy Jackson. In our cast, you heard Cole Hornaday as Jack Packard, Renaud LaBeouf as Doc Long, with Joy Jackson as Jerry Booker, Melinda Maines as Gail Stark, Michael Mokey O'Reilly as Pio, Greg Porter as A.J. Ben and the narrator, Dan Schindler as J. Irving Stark, Kim Turner as Mansfield, and Richard Haviland as Tuffy. Thanks also to Harry Thiel and Mike Wheeler. Live sound effects by Penny Swanberg and Marilyn Wilt. Music by Kevin McLeod at Incompetech.com. Terror at Frozen Corpse Lodge was originally broadcast May 22 to June 14, 1951. I'm Pat McNally, whom you also heard as Bruce Garrett and Jones the Butler. This is ART, American Radio Theater.
Here's a word from our sponsor.
Potato, 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 and a bucket of fries. Potato, potato, potato.
What the heck is that?
It's the potato song.
The potato song. You're supposed to be writing a jingle for AmericanRadioTheater.org. We don't have you on retainer because there's a shortage of nonsense songs.
Oh, I did that this morning. You want to hear it?
Well, that is why we're here.
I'm a little podcast, short and sweet. You can listen in your house or in the street. Where do I come from? It's quite clear. American Radio Theater. .org.
That's it. We pay you twice what we pay the camel wrangler. And we get I'm a Little Teapot.
Podcast. A good jingle takes time. Meanwhile, that's what I got.
No, what you got is the potato song. What I got is a podcast and a teapot.
Join us again next time for the exciting conclusion of Teapot or Potato on You Be the Jury.
Welcome to Treasures Old and New from ART. Hi, I'm Joy Jackson. We continue with the closing episodes of Isle of a Mystery, Terror at Frozen Corpse Lodge. The snow is melting. All is resolved in this final episode. Is Pio the killer? Episode 18.
American Radio Theater presents I Love a Mystery. new Carlton E. Morse adventure thriller, Terror of Frozen Corpse Lodge. Three o'clock in the afternoon, snowbound at Frozen Corpse Lodge, high and isolated in the Sierra Mountains, somewhere on the California-Nevada border. The weather, which this morning was sub-zero, has suddenly turned bright and hot, and already the weekend's 6 to 8 feet of new snow is beginning to melt and run. In another 24 hours, those who are left alive at the J. Irving Stark Hunting Lodge will be able to leave and catch the narrow-gauge railway back to Reno and civilization. Those who are left alive. Of those who gathered 2 days ago for a weekend of snow sports up here on top of the world, the ancient butler Mansfield is dead, J. Irving Stark is dead, and Bruce Garrett is dead. And out in the tool shed is the body of still another man, Philip Ogden, a friend of Gale Stark. Philip Ogden, who, like three other friends of Gale's back in Hollywood, met his death within 24 hours after kissing her. And those who are left, besides Jack, Doc, and Jerry Booker, are Gale, and the new butler, Jones, and the guest for the night, A.J. Ben, and the caretaker, P.O. Jones and Ben have revealed themselves as special investigators looking into subversive activities in the vicinity of the lodge. It is now known that Gale's kiss of death was a part of the gangster's ingenious plan to spot private investigators on their trail, and that J. Irving Stark and Bruce Garrett had been innocently involved, but were in too deep to get out. Garrett, in his last gasping words, warned them to watch out for P.O., and investigator A.J. Ben had named P.O. as the man wanted for murder and other international crimes. But P.O. crept out to the barn and did away with the gangsters barricaded there, and then gave himself up just to prove he was innocent and a good fellow. Is P.O., the simple, good-natured caretaker, really the mastermind who has plotted this brutal, vicious scheme of international intrigue and murder?
P.O., come here.
See?
If you are an innocent man, why did you jump through the window and run to the barn right after J. Irving was stabbed in the throat? Why did you try to get away?
But, senor, if I stay, I would be prisoner. I would be tied up like sack of potatoes. Everybody think I am guilty. Which I am not.
So you jumped through the window and sneaked down into the barn and killed the gangsters barricaded down there?
See?
Why?
To show you I am not guilty. To show you I am on your side to prove I am good man.
How many men did you get down there?
Yeah, 2, 3, I do not know.
Jones?
Yes, mister?
Are we taking this on P.O. say-so, or did you go in the barn and see for yourself?
I went in, mister. They're dead all right. 4 of them.
4? P.O. said 2 or 3.
Maybe 4, I don't know.
But P.O., was it necessary to kill all of them?
But, senor, of course.
None of them would surrender when you got the drop on them, huh?
No, they were bad hombres. They would rather die than get caught, I think.
Uh-huh, because they was murderers, I reckon.
Si, because they were murderers.
P.O., I'd like to ask you a question.
Si, senor Ben.
Are you carrying any weapons now?
Now? No, senor.
You sure of that, Jones, before you brought him in?
Well, I gave him a quick going over. I wouldn't swear he couldn't have something up his sleeve, maybe.
Mind if we search you once more, P.O.?
Senor, I do not understand his business.
Then you do mind?
No, I do not mind if you wish it.
I do wish. I'll do it myself.
Si, it is okay with me.
Oh, I think it's perfectly silly. P.O. couldn't any more be the man you're looking for that... Just a minute.
Huh? What's the matter?
Doc, Jack, can I talk to you for just a minute?
Well, be just a minute, Ben. Sure, go ahead while I finish going over P.O.
Come over here, where I can talk to you alone. Well, this'll do. You too, Jerry.
Yeah, okay.
Look, I just thought of this. We haven't got any proof that A.J. Ben and Jones are who they say they are.
Oh?
It's perfectly silly to try to pin this on P.O. He's nothing but an ignorant, good-natured Mexican caretaker. But either Jones or Mr. Ben, or both of them for that matter, could be playing a part. And all we know about them is what they tell about themselves.
No, Miss Stark, you're on the wrong track.
You say that, but can you prove it?
Yes, I've seen both Ben's and Jones's credentials. They're who they say they are.
There's no doubt about it, Jack?
Not a bit in the world.
The new thing, P.O. is...
Ben's finished with him. Come on, let's go back.
You find anything on him, Ben?
Nope, not a thing.
I just want to tell you, I had nothing.
You know, there's one thing out yonder in the barn that's mighty funny. More I think about it, the more it bothers me.
What's that, Jones?
Well, you remember the St. Valentine's Massacre back in the Middle West during Prohibition?
Yes, what about it?
Well, if you remember, a rival gang lined up the whole bunch of guys up against the garage wall and let them have it with a machine gun.
Oh!
Yeah, well, that's just what it looks like out there in the barn.
You mean P.O. here lined them up and turned a machine gun on them?
Yeah, I don't think them birds had a chance for their money.
Senor, that is wicked thing you say.
It's a wicked thing what happened out there in the barn. And, Mr. Ben, if you want my opinion, I think them boys was Confederates of P.O. here. And when P.O. seen the game was up, well, he went down and liquidated his buddies to make it look like he was on the right side.
Golly!
No, he wouldn't do a terrible thing like that.
For sure I would not do so terrible a thing. What you think I am, senor? A jackal? A vampire?
Well, that's the way it looks to me, mister.
I think maybe we should go down to the barn and have a look at things.
Yes, I wouldn't be surprised. Here, wait a minute. I just remembered something. Jones, in the police records of the man we're looking for, this master criminal, isn't there a paragraph about his hospital record?
The hospital? By jingo, mister.
Huh? What about his hospital records?
Well. Pio, will you please sit down here and take off your right shoe and sock?
Senor, shoe and sock?
Yes, shoe and sock, and hurry up about it.
In presence of ladies, you wish I should...
Come on, feller, before I club you over the skull and do it myself.
Well, just a minute. What is this anyway, Ben?
According to records in the police files, the man we want was shot in the right foot about 8 years ago. He lost the middle toe, leaving a scar in the shape of a five-pointed star.
All right, Pio, take off your shoe and sock. Show them. Prove to them that you're not the man they want.
Unfortunately, Miss Gale, that would be absolutely fatal.
Why? Hey, who said that?
I did. Miss Booker, it is a simple matter for a linguist to speak as I am speaking now. Or as Pio had to speak for 2 years, for my goodness, she weighs.
Pio, then you are this awful person.
As to my being an awful person, I do not know. Gentlemen, apparently the game is finished. Would you get me out of here before this woman starts weeping over me?
Doc, you and Jones keep your guns on him.
Oh, yeah.
As though I am afraid of your guns.
Never mind that. You admit, then, that you went out to the barn and deliberately killed your friends out there in hopes of convincing us of your innocence.
That's right.
And that you shot J. Irving from the kitchen door and through the knife that lodged in his throat.
All quite true.
And that you were responsible for having the girls kidnapped and for Bruce Garrett's death when he rescued them.
You make me sound like a very busy man, but it's all quite true. And to save your breath, I put old Mansfield and the young fellow Philip Ogden out of the way, and I arranged for the death of the three would-be detectives down in Hollywood.
Oh, you horrible, horrible creature.
And now, if you'll excuse me, I'll be going.
Going?
You ain't going no place, sport.
You think I'm not?
Get down, Jerry. Lay down.
Good work, Doc. You got him.
Try to run out on me, will he?
He's lying in the hall. Keep him covered until I have a look at him.
Yeah, let him make just one move.
You girls stay in the tap room.
Yes, of course.
He's still alive, all right.
Of course he's still alive.
You fool, you bloody botching fool. If I couldn't shoot better than that, I'd give up trying.
What you mean, shoot better than that? I'd never miss where I aim.
Well, why didn't you kill me? That's what I intended you should do.
You tried to run thinking I'd kill you.
Yes. Why didn't you?
Oh, no. I shot you in the legs on purpose. You ain't through yet. You still got a debt to settle in the gas chamber with the state of Nevada.
It's good to be back in civilization again.
Hey, Jerry, you don't call Reno civilization, do you?
Well, it's on the edge of civilization. And what's the matter with Reno, anyway, Doc?
Not a doggone thing. I love the town, and this ain't a bad hotel either, you know it. Oh, sitting room with every bedroom? That's what I call swank with a capital S. Hey, it's about time Gail and Jack showed up. Where'd Jack say they was going?
Oh, said the sheriff wanted to talk to Gail again.
Yeah, that's about all we've been doing since we got in last night. Talking to the sheriff's office, the state police, newspaper guys. Doggone, sure didn't take them long to clear the road up to the Frozen Corpse Lodge once we got word out that we had the mastermind with us.
Yeah, I never was so glad to get out of a place in my life. The way Pio, or whatever his name is, lay there and cursed you because you didn't kill him?
Yeah, that wasn't so good, was it?
Brr, if I never get snowed in again, it'll be too soon.
Uh-huh. Well, Pio's gonna get what's coming to him, and so let's just forget him. How about me ringing room service and having something long and cool and stimulating sent up?
Not for me, thanks. I think I'll go to my room and crawl into the tub for a good hot soak.
Hot baths ain't good for you. Read somewhere.
You would believe everything you read. You're just the type.
Hello? Come in.
Oh, it's locked.
Just a minute. Thought I left it unlocked. Oh, it's you.
What are you trying to do, lock me out? Hello, Jerry.
Oh, hi. Where's Gail?
She wanted to go to her room for a minute. She'll be along.
Anything happened at the sheriff's office?
Nothing new. Just clearing up some details. Say goodbye to Ben and Jones. They're leaving for the east on the night plane.
Yeah, couple of nice guys.
Hey, what's that telegram you got, Jack?
Just what I was wondering myself.
Telegram. Haven't you opened it?
No, just picked it up at the desk downstairs on the way up.
Well, how long can you keep a telegram without opening it anyway?
Almost indefinitely.
Come in.
Oh, come on in, Gail.
Thank you.
Yeah, Jack's got a telegram, and we was trying to get him to open it.
All right, I'll open it.
Yes.
Well, what's it say? I'm a dying to know.
You might regret saying it quite that way.
Jerry, you know I can handle myself in any kind of trouble.
Oh.
Come on, Jack, what's it say? Is that all you're gonna do? Whistle.
Who's it from?
Reggie.
You mean he actually opened some mail while we were freezing our...
Jerry?
In this case, I think it walked into our office. He says, Jack, an old dame named Miss Sedgwick sailed into the office yesterday and wants to provide some security for her. They're about to sail on Miss Sedgwick's motor yacht for an island some hundreds of miles off the coast of Mexico. They have a parchment map, which I understand belongs to a Chinese named P.Y. Ling. This map is supposed to be the clue to a great fortune in pirate's loot. Perhaps they are taking the Chinese along, too. I don't know. But please investigate if you can, as Miss Sedgwick is our client, and I think somebody is taking her for a ride. Miss Sedgwick is very wealthy and slightly eccentric.
Wealthy and eccentric, but he don't say how old she is.
Well, some treasure hunt, an eccentric old maid, a Chinese... And probably a sea captain with a long gray beard.
Golly, pirate's loot. Would I ever love to get in on that?
Well, not me. No, thank you.
You don't want to hunt buried treasure?
With an old maid heading the expedition, Miss Stark, I'd rather go crawl into a hole somewhere.
What do you say, Jack?
After reading the P.S., I'm thinking of going.
Huh? Who ever heard of a P.S. on a telegram?
Well, there is on this one. Listen. The island of Scott, where the treasure is supposed to be buried, may be inhabited with people who don't know murder and torture is against the law. So, watch out.
Well, now he's saying something.
Think we ought to get in on this, Doc?
Think. Son, you and me's practically on Skull Island right now.
This has been a presentation of a lost old-time radio show by American Radio Theater. I Love a Mystery was written by Carlton E. Morris. This was Book 25, Terror at Frozen Corpse Lodge. Directed by Marge Lutton, assisted by Greg Porter, and produced by Joy Jackson. In our cast, you heard Cole Hornaday as Jack Packard, Renaud LaBeouf as Doc Long, with Joy Jackson as Jerry Booker, Melinda Maines as Gail Stark, Michael Moki O'Reilly as Pio, Greg Porter as A.J. Ben and the narrator, Dan Schindler as J. Irving Stark, Kim Turner as Mansfield, and Richard Haviland as Tuffy. Thanks also to Harry Thiel and Mike Wheeler. Live sound effects by Penny Swanberg and Marilyn Wilt. Music by Kevin McLeod at Incompetech.com.
Terror at Frozen Corpse Lodge was originally broadcast May 22 to June 14, 1951. I'm Pat McNally, whom you also heard as Bruce Garrett and Jones the Butler. This is ART, American Radio Theater.
Let's have a listen to some music from the days of old-time radio.
One Night Stand presents the music of Tony Pastor and his orchestra. From the Hollywood Palladium in the heart of the film capital, One Night Stand brings you the distinctive music of Tony Pastor and his orchestra with lyrics by Ruth McCullough, Dick Dyer, and Tony himself. And we get things underway instrumentally with Stars in Your Eyes. Tony Pastor and his music coming to you from the Hollywood Palladium, and you've just heard Stars in Your Eyes. And now we've reached medley time rather early in our broadcast. Dick Dyer sings Dream and I Should Care. Tony?
thing to do. Still, watch the smoke rings rise in the air. You'll find your share of memories there. So when the day is through, and they might come through. Never are as bad as they seem. So for a dream or two, but then I got my sheep world. It's funny how sheep can lull you to sleep. So I should let it upset me. I won't find someone as lovely as you, but I should care, and I do.
I'm gonna love that guy. Gonna Love That Guy, a fine rendition sung for you by Ruth McCullough. Now we're going to hear vocally from Tony Pastor. Tony sings for us, Five Salted Peanuts.
I put a penny in a slot, but all I ever got was five salted peanuts. I always hoped to get a lot, but all I ever got was five salted peanuts. I'll keep trying, come what may. Maybe there will come a day I'll find a machine they forgot to fix. Instead of five, I'll get six. I put a penny in a slot, but all I ever got was five salted peanuts. I put all my pennies in, but I don't ever win. It's driving me nuts. Those darn machines know how to count. I always get the same amount. I put a penny in a slot, but all I ever got was five salted peanuts. Now I've got a butcher who gives me all the steaks and chops I can eat, but it gets me sore. I can't get more than five salted peanuts. Now I've got a wife, six kids too. At home I know just what to do. I kiss my wife like a loving husband. But to kiss a peanut machine doesn't do any good. I put a penny in a slot, but all I ever got was five salted peanuts. I always hoped to get a lot, but all I ever got was five salted peanuts. Guess I'm just a crazy mug. Even tried to use a slug. The peanut machine must have known it too. A sign lit up, "No nuts to you." I put a penny in a slot, but all I ever got was five salted peanuts. I put all my pennies in, but I never win. It's driving me nuts. Those darn machines know how to count. I always get the same amount. I put a penny in the slot, but all I ever got was five salted peanuts.
Yes, indeed. And so, friends, we've reached the halfway point in our dancing party, and we'd like to pause now briefly to remind you that it's music by Tony Pastor and his orchestra coming to you from the Hollywood Palladium, the dining, dancing, and entertainment center of the West. Continuing now with another vocal by our maestro Tony Pastor. This one has a very cute lyric, and it's called Hence That Don't Make Sense.
When we use words like scat cat, skin fin, replete, the
squares want to give us the heebie-jeebies, for the jive was tough today. But when I hear those sticks talk, that's straight from the sticks talk, it don't make sense, I say, when they use the slang of yesterday. In the following way, now a girl is a babe, and a babe is a chick, and a chick is a bird, and a bird is a fowl, and a fowl is a ball, and a ball is a great big dance, but a girl ain't a great big dance, hence it don't make sense. A jerk is a pull, and a pull is a tug, and a tug is a crab, and a crab is a trick, and a trick is a gal, and a gal is a big romance, but a jerk ain't a great romance, hence it don't make sense. Now a skirt is a gal, and a gal is a doll, and a doll is a deer, and a deer is a buck, and a buck is a man, and a man is a pair of pants, but a skirt ain't a pair of pants, pants that don't make sense. Now a skunk is a fur, and a fur is a fleece, and a fleece is a theft, and a theft is a sin, and a sin is taboo, and taboo is perfume from friends, but a skunk ain't perfume from friends, hence it don't make, hence it don't make sense.
Well, we just heard "Hence It Don't Make Sense" by Brother Tony Pastor. Now let's listen to Brother Stubby Pastor, his trumpets, and Sweet Lorraine.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Stubby. That was Tony Pastor's little brother, Stubby Pastor, and his trumpet and Sweet Lorraine. And now it's encore time for Ruth McCullough. She brings us the lyrics this time to I'm Beginning to See the Light.
That's all the time I've got for today. Please stop by our website, AmericanRadioTheater.org, for more of our podcasts. You know, we put up a new one every month. Hey, see you next time!